So you are on the road now promoting your new book, correct?
That's correct. This is the 13th book that I've written, and it's the one that I most enjoyed writing. It deals, of course, with Abraham Lincoln.
How did you come to choose Abraham Lincoln as a subject?
Well, I've always admired Lincoln. I grew up in South Dakota, where he was a big hero. But beyond that, I think Lincoln left us a number of things that have built up his legacy, and one of those are the beautiful speeches that he himself crafted. He was his own speechwriter. And when you look at the Gettysburg Address or the first or second inaugural, you're looking at three of the finest presidential addresses ever delivered. So that's one of the reasons I want to dig into his letters. I wanted to read them for myself. I wanted to read his speeches again and to dig into the record to find out how he put those great messages together. Some of the personal letters that he wrote to people are literary gems. And it was an enriching experience to go back, read those words again, and then delve into the reasons that he spoke at that time and why it reflected his view of the kind of a country he wanted America to be.
Are you exploring Lincoln, the man and the writer, more, or Lincoln, the president and the noted speech maker?
Well, I pay high tribute to his writing. I don't think Lincoln would have the position that he now holds with the American people, both North and South, East and West, if it were not for the wonderful literary achievements that he left for us. But of course, what motivated those great speeches and great letters was the political, social, economic, and spiritual conditions that prevailed in the country at the time he was president. So obviously, I looked primarily at the Civil War. I looked at the way he handled the issue of slavery. I looked at his views on other issues. There were several things that happened in the Lincoln administration that some biographers have either not noted at all or have skipped over lightly. But in 1862, in the middle of the Civil War, the Homestead Act was enacted and signed into law by President Lincoln. The Morrill Act, which created all the land-grant colleges in this country, one in each state, were passed during Lincoln's administration. The creation of the Department of Agriculture.
You had mentioned that one of the things that made President Lincoln's writing so spectacular was the time that he was writing it in. And do you think that there were times in American history where just the conditions wouldn't have come together for something to have been so meaningful?
Well, I think the times were dominated by the Civil War. War could have easily ended the United States. And Lincoln understood that, so he knew what the burden was on his shoulders. Are you receiving me now?
Yes.
Okay. He knew what the burden was on his shoulders was unprecedented, and I think it led him to probe to the very depths the forces that he thought were worth supporting in our lifetimes and those forces that we had to oppose. And that was Lincoln's greatness, to know that his number one responsibility was to preserve the Union against the breakup. Before the Civil War and the secession of 11 states, New England had considered some years before seceding from the Union. So he wanted to stop any movement towards secession on the part of any state, and I think that was his greatest achievement, to hold the United States of America inviolate and a permanent nation.
Do you think now, with the things that are happening in the world today or in the country today and the country's involvement in the activities of the rest of the world, that any of the speeches given now by either the president or other politicians will be remembered the same way?
Well, yes, I do think that his message is relevant to our own day. For example, he said way back in the early 1860s, "A nation divided against itself cannot stand." He was actually paraphrasing a verse in the New Testament, which read, "A house divided against itself cannot stand." He transposed that to the phrase, "A nation divided against itself cannot stand." Well, a lot of people think that the intense partisanship, the backbiting, the sniping, the negative politics that we so frequently witness today is the kind of thing that Lincoln was warning against more than a century ago. So I think, yes, his message is still relevant.
You certainly know about, I think most famously through your presidential campaign, negative politics and some negative practices. Do you think that the lessons of Lincoln weren't fully learned, or do you think that sometimes they're forgotten?
Well, when I ran for president in 72, you're quite right that I experienced negative politics. Those little 30-second and 60-second television ads that were carried over and over again, called me the candidate of the three A's: acid, amnesty, and abortion. None of those things represent my view of the important issues before the country. I never advocated acid. I never advocated amnesty while the war was in progress, but I did say that once the war was over, I would grant an amnesty both to those who planned the war and those who refused to fight in it. The business about acid is just ridiculous.
What's your opinion of some of the things happening now as far as the divisions, the partisan divisions in the country?
Well, I think the good news is that we have a president who recognized that problem even before he started his campaign. He thought there was too much negativism. He thought there was too much sniping and backbiting between politicians. And you'll remember during the campaign, he said, "Look, when I view this country, I don't see red states and blue states. I see the United States of America." And I think he's leaning over backwards. For example, one of the most important posts in any presidential administration is Secretary of Defense. And he kept on, Secretary Gates, who those who know him say is a very dedicated and capable man. He appointed two or three other key Republicans to high office. So I think he's kept up that message that helped him win the presidency in the first place, trying to bring this country back together. He's not a slam bang, the devil take the hindmost politician. He's a thoughtful, decent, I think highly intelligent man, and one of absolute personal integrity. So I think some of the divisions and anger and frustration that has characterized American politics for the last decade is going to subside. under President Obama. I initially endorsed Senator Hillary Clinton for the Democratic presidential nomination, and I think she's a very good woman, very capable woman, and that she's going to do a great job as Secretary of State. But the more I listened to that 2008 presidential campaign, the more I decided that Barack Obama was the man of the hour, and I threw my support behind him.
How do you think some of the negativism going on right now in the national dialogue compares to what was happening in 1972 and 1968 and in the 1860s, in the time of Lincoln?
Yeah. Well, you know, the truth is that American politics has always been marked by intense attacks, especially when politicians were in the closing days of the campaign. We had that as far back as George Washington, our first president. It was so intense that Washington said, when he was urged to run for a third term, "I would rather be in my grave than to spend another 4 years in the White House." Thomas Jefferson felt the same way. He was slandered by the Federalist opponents. So that kind of thing is nothing new in American politics. We've tended to have free swinging political figures. Maybe that's one of the prices we have to pay for free speech. But I repeat what I said before. I think that President Obama is going to treat the country to a new level of politics that will make all of us proud to be American citizens.
Do you find that by studying the past, you mentioned George Washington, you mentioned Thomas Jefferson and the critics of founding fathers, and you've just come off this research and writing project with Abraham Lincoln. Do you find that studying the past and the history of the country gives you some reassurance for the future?
I do. I think that the philosopher was right when he said years ago that he who does not know history is condemned to repeat it. Now, let me say one thing somewhat critical of President Obama. I want him to be a great president, and I think he's going to be one, but I think he's making a mistake adding another 20,000 troops to the force we had in Afghanistan under President Bush. I wish he would take steps right now to begin closing down any military operations in either Iraq or Afghanistan. You say, do we ever learn from history? If we do, then we ought to remember that the British tried to do exactly what we're now trying to do 100 years ago. In other words, to pacify those warlords and the violent elements in Afghanistan, and they failed. The British had one of the most brilliant military forces in the world. It wasn't that they didn't have great officers and great men. They had the best there were. And they were the mightiest empire in the world, but they struck out in Afghanistan. Now, the same is true with the Russians in our own day, the 1980s. The Russians sent in 100,000 crack soldiers, the best they had. 25,000 of those young Russians were killed in Afghanistan, and more than 25,000 were wounded or crippled by that battle. And it cost the Soviet treasury tens of billions of dollars. Some of our Soviet experts believe that it was that war that led to the collapse of the Soviet Union, the breakup of the Soviet Union. I don't want to see Barack Obama and the American people go through something like that in Afghanistan. Let's remember what happened to the Russians what happened to the British and learn from those mistakes, even as those two countries came to learn about the tragic nature of their mistakes.
Do you think the result of those two campaigns was the product of the Afghani culture and the society, or of the British or the Russian mindset in sending troops in?
No, I don't think it was the British or the Russian mindset that caused them to fail, and I don't think it's our mindset that would cause us to fail. It's the nature of Afghanistan itself. If I can exaggerate just a point, what you have in Afghanistan is not so much a nation, but a collection of warlords, each one sitting atop a different mountain, glowering at each other, with a tribe backing each one of those warlords. And what's going on now is a certain amount of warfare between two or more groups of Afghans. The Taliban are Afghanis, but their loyalty is to their leader and their view of the state, not to the capital of Afghanistan in Kabul. I dare say almost everyone in Afghanistan is more loyal to their particular tribal leader than they are to the government in Kabul. So we ought to look at that hard reality very squarely before we get any more deeply involved in warfare there.
Senator, we're running out of time here. I wanted to ask you a question. You're about to be in Louisville. You're going to speak in Louisville on Sunday night. A famous Louisvillian, Hunter Thompson, wrote a book that you figure quite largely in, Fear and Loathing on the Campaign Trail, 1972. I was wondering what your reaction is.
Well, that was a great book. I think it was Hunter Thompson's most important book, Fear and Loathing on the Campaign Trail, 1972. He, from the very beginning, covered me very closely. He followed me everywhere. And he was the first nationally known journalist who came to the conclusion I was going to win that Democratic presidential nomination. You may be aware that there were 16 able contenders for that nomination, some of them very formidable, like Vice President Hubert Humphrey, Senator Ed Muskie, Mayor John Lindsay of New York City, and a whole slew of other people, Scoop Jackson of Washington, D.C., and many others. And Hunter was the first person who started writing that I was going to win that nomination. Now, let me say about Hunter, and I love the he was brilliant about 3 or 4 days a week, and he was slightly crazy the other 3 or 4 days. I suspect that drugs and booze had something to do with that.
All right. Thank you very much for your time, sir.
Well, it's a pleasure.